an offensive mental skill that was based on battle intent rather than wisdom or intelligence sounded like a great addition to his current repertoire, so he rushed over to the corpse to try his luck. But no matter how many times he went over the demon's body, he couldn't find a spatial tool. Zack swore in annoyance, but he wasn't overly surprised. The demon had seemed pretty confident that Zack wouldn't learn the skill if he died, so it would be odd if he could loot it so easily from his body. However, Zack did make an interesting discovery as he looked around in the pit. There was light coming from within one of the cracks leading into the heart of the mountain. Chapter 6. Road to 1000. From one of the cracks in the ground, Zack could see a flickering light, but when he peered into it, he couldn't see what the source was. It did, however, reignite Zack's hope, and he started to cut his way into the mountain with the help of his axe. The light steadily grew brighter as he made his way down, and he suddenly found himself in a passageway that was clearly not naturally formed. There was a tunnel hiding 50 meters down from the summit, and as Zack followed it even further down into the heart of the mountain, he found that it led to an opulent cultivation cave. Thick rugs from unknown animals covered the ground, and all kinds of ornaments and treasures were strewn around the floor. There were even small mountains of Nexus crystals almost touching the ceiling, no doubt vast wealth for anyone in the F grade. The exorbitant interiors were diametrically opposite from the image of an erudite master, and Zack thanked the heavens for sending the paranoid demon to his side. If Agras's distrust hadn't rubbed off on him, he would have been completely immersed in the training session, taking the behavior of the old demon as the desire of a dying warrior to leave behind something for the world. Even if he had survived the encounter, he would have simply entered the teleporter as it appeared. But not everyone cared about leaving an inheritance. In fact, most wandering cultivators had no intention of doing so unless they settled down. Even in established factions, it wasn't uncommon for an old master to barely leave anything behind. All the wealth they had gathered over the years would already have been used to prolong their own lifespans and to desperately try to break through. Zack didn't know why the old goat didn't keep all of his wealth inside a cosmos sack, but it made things easier for him as he swept through the cultivation cave, leaving nothing behind. But he wasn't content even after that, and he kept cutting through the mountain walls for over an hour until he found a small hidden pocket with a cosmos sack inside. This was what he had been looking for, as there was a rough skill crystal lying inside. It did look a bit worn, though, meaning it had already been used. It started to seem a bit likely that the skill wasn't even something that the demon had invented, but rather something he had found through a fortuitous encounter. The cosmos sack was also filled with various high-grade treasures, at least for a wandering F-grade cultivator. There were only a dozen or so crystals, but all of them were E-grade and life-attuned, perhaps used to help prolong life. There were also a couple of pills and a few manuals, but Zack didn't go through them one by one, but rather threw them all in his cosmos sack. He wouldn't mess with pills or natural treasures he found while climbing unless he could be sure what they were. If the items stayed on after the climb, he could have Galau or Kalrin identify them. He did immediately teach himself the skill, however, and a new fractal appeared right above his navel. It was a disappointing placement, as he knew that it was a pretty common position for class skills. It was close to where the cultivator's core would be placed, or rather, close to where his specialty core was currently nestled. It was no problem right now, but it was extremely likely that his class would provide a skill for that location sooner or later, meaning that he would get limited usage of True Strike. But that was a problem for the future. Who knew? It was possible he wouldn't get a skill for that slot until he became D-grade, and this was an issue that all warriors eventually encountered. Zack was pretty lucky that he hadn't encountered any clashes between his skills so far, even though he had used up more than half of his skill sockets. But sooner or later, he would have to start discarding skills to make room for stronger ones or skills that better suited his cultivation path. Zack quickly returned to the summit after having found what he had been looking for, and to his surprise he saw a dozen of the little beings he encountered earlier. They all silently stood in the distance, a couple of them swaddled in bandages, no doubt a result of Zack manhandling them during the climb. Thankfully, there was no animosity in their eyes when Zack appeared, and they bowed in respect when they saw him arrive. Zack nodded in response, realizing that the demon might have been a scourge to the area. The erudite master still had taught Zack a few valuable lessons, though. It might just have been a ruse designed to let his guard down, but he could still be considered one of his teachers. So Zack also gave the unmoving body of the old demon a small bow before he stepped through the teleporter.
Fourth floor complete. Upgrading title. Choose reward. High-grade strength fruit. High-grade dexterity fruit. High-grade intelligence fruit.
Zack's eyes lit up when he saw the rewards, but he held off on choosing and instead opted to first check out his title.
Tower of Eternity. Fourth floor. Reach the 37th level of the Tower of Eternity. Reward. All stats plus 10. Strength plus 5%. Endurance plus 5%. Vitality plus 5%.
Zack nodded in satisfaction. The bonuses followed the same pattern as the first three floors of the tower, where he first got a bonus that improved his three main attributes. This pattern would continue for the following two floors as well. As for the final three floors, Zack had no idea. He assumed that he would gain efficiency in the same manner as the earlier floors, but he couldn't be certain. Not even Galau could confidently answer what was the case, as too few people in their sector reached those floors. However, Galau did mention a rumor that the top climbers were more interested in the floor rewards than the titles. The quality of the items that the system rewarded had steadily risen, and now it presented something that Zack hadn't even encountered in the base town. Attribute fruits, and high-grade ones at that. Even the best fruits he'd gotten his hands on in the hunt were only mid-grade. Unfortunately, there were no luck fruits or all-attribute fruits, but Zack figured that those kinds of fruits might still appear on a higher floor. His eyes went back and forth between his options as he tried to decide what to get. He could immediately discard the intelligence fruit, since it was the most useless attribute for him, but he wasn't sure which to pick among the other two. Dexterity would help him maintain the balance, which would get especially skewed as he kept improving his Tao of the Axe, but he still chose strength in the end for a simple reason. He still hadn't given up his desire to reach 1,000 strength before he evolved. He hoped that would not only provide him with better class options, but also counteract the effect of his massive endurance pool. He didn't want to get stuck with two tank classes because he had enough endurance for 5 men. The darkness had started to scatter as he'd made his choice, and he found himself facing a hulking warrior clad in spiked armor. He held a sword in each hand and radiated dense killing intent as he took a step toward Zack. Zack put away his attribute fruit while jumping away a few meters to get a better understanding of what was going on, and the quest prompt appeared just as he landed.
End the tradition of slave death matches to settle disputes.
A quest to enact social reform? How was he supposed to do that without wasting a lot of time? Was the system expecting him to make a grand speech or something? Zack shuddered at the thought as he looked around the packed masses. His eyes instead found a likely target for a guardian, discarding any thought of completing the level the proper way. It was an extremely obese man who sat in a seat of honor, overlooking the fight while he was fed some sort of fruits by what was obviously slaves.
"Hey, I want to kill that fat guy. Will you help me?"
Zack said to the gladiator.
"Do you know anything about the arrays in this place?"
But the other gladiator didn't so much as react to his words, and he once again tried to kill him. Zack could only sigh as he flashed forward and punched the gladiator with enough force to throw him like a rag doll. The man soared like a projectile straight toward the corpulent man, who looked on with interest.
A blue, shimmering wall lit up just as the gladiator was about to leave the arena, and Zack noticed a small surge of energy to his left. It was a pillar just a few meters away from him, and there were a couple more just like them. Zack didn't delay a second, and he shot out toward the fat despot, while he shot out huge fractal blades imbued with the fragment of the axe in rapid succession. Each of them slammed into one of the pillars almost at the same time, and the barrier protecting the array flags wasn't strong enough to withstand strikes at multiple of its weak spots at once. A snap echoed out across the arena as the shields failed, and a resounding crash followed when the pillars were turned into rubble. Seeing that over half the array flags were broken, Zack jumped toward the luxurious seats like a beast that had broken the chains holding it down. The fat leader's cheeks jiggled in fear, and he screamed while frantically taking out a token hanging around his chest. It lit up with a hum, and Zack found himself slamming into the ground like a comet. It was a gravity array that had been erected, and it was the strongest one Zack had encountered since he'd walked through the Zethia Pillhouse entrance. To be more precise, it was exactly the same as what he had encountered, which made Zack ponder while he got back to his feet. Was this intentional? Had the Zethia set it up so that only those with enough power to reach the fifth floor would be able to enter their store? It wouldn't be too hard for them to set something like that up. There was one difference compared to the previous time he was inside an array like this. Zack wasn't trying to impress anyone by toughing it out with only his body. He released his Dao field for the axe, causing one shallow cut after another to appear on the ground around him. The Dao field helped him counteract the suppressive force to a pretty large degree, and Zack didn't have any trouble moving about any longer. One swing was all it took to destroy a hastily erected backup shield that the fat man's bodyguards set up, and with two quick steps, he found himself in front of his target.
"Wait, I can pay you,"
the man trembled.
"Is this arena yours?" Zack simply asked.
"Yes, yes,"
the man fervently nodded.
"I'll gift it to you. It's yours. The slaves as well."
Zack only answered with a swing of Varun's bite. However, a ruthless gleam appeared in the man's eyes, and he launched a massive burst of flames that drowned Zack before it continued to cover half the arena. A snort could be heard from inside the inferno, and a bestial roar followed as the flames were forcibly ripped apart by a swing of Zack's axe. The merchant could only helplessly look on as his torso separated from his legs before he succumbed to death. Zack bent over the corpse to look for anything of value, but the man didn't even carry a cosmos sack. At least the encounter gave him a decent hint of the strength required for the fifth floor, and he was pleasantly surprised to realize that the strength of the arena master was roughly the same power as the bandit lord on the floor where he'd left Galau. It meant that the fifth floor would barely be any harder than the fourth, except that the quests would likely turn more complicated or require more advanced knowledge. Not having to deal with the 40% bonus of his enemies was pretty nice, and Zack felt that reaching the sixth floor was a given. As for the seventh and higher, he would have to wait and see. It was also good news for Agros, unless the demon encountered some sort of situation that directly countered his skill set, then conquering the fifth floor was a distinct possibility. Getting two top-tier rewards and a boost in attributes would come in handy for the upcoming fights. The silence was deafening in the arena as Zack stood over the bisected corpse of the arena master. No one dared to either flee or speak up for fear that they would be targeted by the crazed gladiator. Zack didn't care about their reaction as he surveyed his surroundings, but his eyes lit up when he saw that the teleporter had already appeared in the middle of the arena, and he flashed over. He had been afraid that killing the arena master wouldn't be enough, and that the real guardian was the lord of the town or something like that. Luckily, the system had thrown him a bone, handing out an easy one on the first level. Zack stepped onto the teleporter without bothering to explain himself to the still reeling spectators of the arena. He had started to become a bit numb to the various people he encountered,
and he couldn't really be bothered to treat them differently than if they were puppets. His mind was only focused on climbing higher.
Chapter 7. Cosmic Gaze. The next level placed him in an odd world where it felt like the colors were inverted, and he walked in a forest with white trunks and black leaves under a purple sky. The system wasn't as generous on the second world, and it took him over a day to figure out who the guardian was and to trap the wily beast. Things were pretty much the same from there on out, as Zack bashed his way from one level to another. His resolve to finish the quests fell apart after just 3 days when he found himself utterly unable to finish a single one of the first 3 levels of the 5th floor. In the end, he only managed to complete 2 quests on the whole floor, 1 assassination and 1 quest to locate a treasure. The assassination was done as sloppily as was humanly possible. Zack simply stormed the mansion of the target and killed him before he had the chance to run away, destroying half a city block while completing the mission. He would have been fired on the spot from any decent assassin organization after such a shameful display. As for the treasure quest, he simply was lucky. He accidentally overheard a few clues from an old drunk outside a tavern, and he almost stumbled onto the right spot just a few hours later. Perhaps his luck was finally reaching the point where treasures almost jumped straight into his hands of their own volition. But even with his luck and his decision to kill the guardians most of the time, it still took him 13 days to complete the 8 levels of the 5th floor. That was pretty much what it took to climb the first 3 floors altogether, although they hadn't rushed through those levels. He did, however, spend some time mastering Bulwark Mastery, and as expected, he had been shown several visions related to cultivators focusing on their shields. There had been some differences between the various cultivators, but the similarities were far greater between the visions related to shields compared to those he got from Axe Mastery. Essentially, all of them were related to defending, though it happened in different ways. Some were like Zack's class, warriors who stood at the forefront of armies, soaking up the damage and the hate so that their companions would be safe. Others were mages or array masters who were able to erect massive defenses with their shields acting as the core. Only a few were also offensively geared, but Zack instinctively felt that using a shield for attacking was suboptimal and nothing that he was interested in delving deeper into. None of the visions really resonated with him, and it made him wonder just what he should do when evolving. He had spent most of the 5th floor in his Draugr form, and he had to say that he was loath to fight without activating Vanguard of Undeath now. Just getting a miasmic axe made Zack feel a much greater connection to the class, and he knew he needed to reduce the reliance on shields for his skills going forward. If that would happen immediately when evolving, then great. If not, he'd simply have to take it step by step and gradually move toward a more axe-focused fighting style in his Draugr form as well. The delay caused by working on his skills only added 1 extra day, but some worry about the higher floors started to sprout in the back of Zack's mind. He began to wonder if his problem would be running out of time rather than lack of power. How frustrating would it be if the time ran out just as he was about to defeat a floor guardian? Or what if he got stuck altogether, wasting weeks on some level he was unable to figure out? At least the floor guardian wasn't anything to write home about. It was a massive golem that would be able to keep the fire golem leader in a pocket, as it towered an impressive 30 meters into the air. It was like fighting a moving skyscraper, a massive construct of stone and crystal. The golem had once been a guardian construct of a long-gone force, and for some reason it had awakened from its sealed chambers to wreak havoc on the area. Judging by the situation, it might have gone the same way as Brasla, its artificial mind slowly getting twisted over the lonely eons. Zack adopted a straightforward approach to dealing with the construct, which used a mix of shockwaves and earth-based attacks. It also used its gargantuan limbs for straightforward attacks, which were powerful enough to crush mountains. With the help of Chop and the fragment of the axe,
He managed to dismantle the giant piece by piece over an hour, all while dodging his attacks with the help of Loamwalker. It was a bit hard to compare the strength between the golem and the erudite master, but he estimated that the golem was only around 20% stronger than the demon. He would likely have been able to finish it off with either nature's punishment or deforestation, but Zack wanted to gain some experience in fighting against larger targets. He knew that the reason for the small difference in strength was because the party penalty was gone, and he reminded himself not to get complacent as he ripped out a huge inscribed crystal that had been in the golem's chest. Zack knew nothing about constructs, but he felt that the thing in his hands should be the equivalent to an array core, and it might be possible to repurpose it somehow if he could keep it. He left the rest of the giant where it lay. It was essentially scrap metal without the core, especially after Zack had launched hundreds of attacks on it. Fifth floor complete. Upgrading title. Choose reward. Offensive skill. Defensive skill. Support skill. Note, all skills will have 80% compatibility or higher. Zack took a quick gander at his title, and he could confirm that nothing unexpected had happened with it. Tower of Eternity, 5th floor. Reach the 46th level of the Tower of Eternity. Reward, all stats, plus 10. Strength, plus 5%. Endurance, plus 5%. Vitality, plus 5%. All stats, plus 5%. It simply gave an additional 5% to all attributes, which had officially turned it into the title providing the most amount of attributes by now. It had pushed his strength one step further, placing it at 927 with the help of the peak-grade strength fruit he'd consumed the moment he had the chance. The title also pushed his luck to 204, but it seemed that there was no upgraded version of his ambidextrous title. Perhaps something related to luck would appear at 250 points, but he didn't hold his breath for it. Zack had long realized that it was getting harder and harder to get his hands on new titles. Stocking up on two more limited titles wouldn't be too hard, but he needed to find a mystic realm or trial that fit. That was a later headache, though, and Zack instead focused on the three rewards, a bit hesitant as to what to choose. The system guaranteed a good fit with his pathways, but the trouble was choosing what would help him the most. There was also the issue of which class the system would provide the skill for, but he guessed that his human form was more likely. It was still his true race, and also the form he had been in when defeating the Floor Guardian. But he still kept his mind open in case he was proven wrong. Offensive skills were the first thing Zack discarded. His offensive capabilities weren't lacking in either of his classes, especially with his two Tao fragments to help. That left defensive and support skills on the table. He felt he was somewhat lacking a defensive skill in his current form, as his mental fortress skill was of middling quality at best. It also had no connection to his Taos, making a Tao infusion impossible. Physical defenses weren't an issue, though, with nature's barrier and Hatchet Man's spirit providing extra layers of protection on top of his huge pool of endurance, and he didn't even need to mention the defensive capabilities of his other class. Eventually, Zack chose to go with a support skill. There was no guarantee that he would get a skill to replace Mental Fortress, even if he picked the defensive skill, while support skills could help him in all kinds of ways. A blinding pain erupted in his head, and the world turned white as it felt like someone was pouring acid in his eyes. Even Zack wasn't immune to the soul-rending pain, and he found himself on the floor, writhing in agony for God knows how long, until the pain finally subsided. Sweat rolled down his head as he blearily looked around, and he realized that he had already been thrown into a new world, one of endless darkness and glaciers. The cold would have turned a mortal into a popsicle in a second. But Zack barely noticed it as he looked inward after having made sure there were no enemies nearby. He wasn't surprised to learn that the skill he had just gained was ocular, as the pain he had just felt in his eyes was all too familiar. It was the agony he'd felt when he had been forced to redraw his crude pathways into the proper ones provided by his class. It was like inscribing something on his soul, where he first had to erase his old skill, only to inscribe a new one. He had hoped that the pain would be less pronounced, like when he'd drawn the pathways for the class in his Draugr form, but there was no such luck. It made him a bit worried about his evolution, but Zack knew that was a later problem as he focused on his new skill. Cosmic gaze. See through the veil of the universe. Upgradable. The flavor text was a bit similar to his old skill, Inquisitive Eye, though it felt a lot more impressive to see through the veil of the universe than to see through their secrets. The skill was also connected to his pathways, and it was a great fit, which was a step up from the disconnected fractals that had simply hovered in his eyes before. Zack looked around for a target to try the skill out on, but the area was truly desolate. That by itself was a problem, though. So Zack started to move away from where he appeared. Safety was an illusion this far up the tower, and he couldn't stay around in what was probably a trap. However, he still wanted to see what his new skill did, and he eventually tried to activate it on a pristine white tree nearby. The world suddenly changed, and the dour landscape turned into a vibrant tapestry that shimmered in silver, blue, and white. Zack almost fell down from the rapid change in his surroundings, and it felt just like when he had been drowning in Origin Dao from the Dao Funnel. The half-dead tree was suddenly a network of blue energy that surged from its roots beneath the snow up into its trunk. It was depending on the energy of the earth, rather than photosynthesis, to live. But Zack barely had time to marvel at the beautiful scene before a formless blob of energy rose from the ground and globbed onto him. And Zack was shocked to notice there were already a couple of blobs sticking to his legs and his back when he looked down. Small motes of lights were slowly leaving his body and entering the little blobs, meaning they were stealing something from him without him noticing. The first thing that came to mind was leeches. Were these little things slowly sucking him dry of cosmic energy? He quickly tried to brush the things away, but his hands passed right through. However, he thankfully found that they weren't immune to his Dao fragment, and they were quickly disintegrated after a few Dao-infused swings of his hand. Help the expedition team find the isotuned crystal mine. The quest appeared just as he destroyed the pack of energy balls, and Zack suddenly found himself holding a disc that was pretty similar to the beacon array that Galau had used before. He quickly put the array away as he set out to complete the quest. It took Zack over 6 hours in the freezing winds to find the place he was looking for, a nondescript snow-covered hill that only reached 50 meters into the air. It certainly wasn't the kind of mountain where you'd expect to find a Nexus crystal mine, as the energies were barely elevated above the norm in the area. But, thanks to cosmic gaze, he could see that a cold blue light was slowly seeping out of the hill in a few spots. And after he cleared the area, he saw that the lights emerged from a couple of cracks. The lights only grew brighter as Zack cut his way down a couple of meters, and he could quickly confirm he had found his target as the stone started to become studded with white-blue crystals. He didn't immediately activate the beacon, though, but he instead extracted a few dozen isotuned Nexus crystals. He only looted right around the entrance before he activated the beacon, as he felt that cleaning house would be a mistake. The disc suddenly enlarged, and a group of humanoids stepped through, led by an ice-blue troll that was just skin and bone. He held a staff in his hand, and the whole area turned a few degrees colder when he appeared. The troll only threw Zack a glance before he looked down into the mine and nodded with satisfaction. He did release a snort when he saw the holes in the walls, but he didn't comment on Zack snatching a little bit for himself.
Pay him, the shaman said with a raspy voice, and another troll stepped forward and handed Zack a box.
Zack accepted the box and put it away before stepping onto the teleportation array that had been created from the array disc. This was what he had expected. Looting the mine would have given him a couple of isotuned Nexus crystals, which were pretty much useless for him.
but properly completing a quest usually brought rewards, and Zack gambled that the reward would be better than the crystals. His new skill proved extremely helpful over the following levels, as various secrets that would have passed him right by were displayed as clear as day from his magical vision. The skill wasn't some sort of universal key, though, and Zack quickly realized that the lights he saw through cosmic gaze were attuned energies, and most energies simply weren't attuned. But attunement was related to the Tao, which helped give him an early warning when someone infused a skill with their Taos. More importantly, he realized that no one noticed when he used the skill on them, which was an issue that had essentially made his old ocular skill useless. Now he would be able to glean clues from his enemies without them noticing, and Zack knew it might be just what he needed when he saw the quest for the final level of the sixth floor. Defeat the Enlightened Three in a Tao Discourse. Chapter 8. Thelim. Zack found himself standing on a gravel road in the middle of a tranquil forest the moment he appeared in the final level of the sixth floor, and the quest to defeat the Enlightened Three in a Tao Discourse had appeared immediately upon arrival. If Zack had been tasked with something like this a few weeks ago, he would have thought the quest meant he was supposed to expound on the Tao, proving his deeper understanding compared to these three enlightened cultivators. It would be like a theological debate between a couple of monks. But Galau had mentioned Tao discourses in passing, which saved Zack the embarrassment. As it turned out, a Tao discourse wasn't something as civil as a debate in the traditional sense. There were no podiums and no moderator keeping score of good arguments. It was actually more like a battle. However, the difference between a Tao discourse and a normal fight was that the battle only utilized the Tao and your mental energy. To make this possible, there was an array simply called a Tao discourse array. The fight wouldn't take place between the combatants personally, since things like attributes and skills would influence the results. The way Galau described how it worked made it sound like a Tao discourse was like a mix of chess and a mock battle. You infused your Taos into the array, and it would conjure various phenomena or avatars that you would use to fight. For example, his fragment of the axe would probably be able to conjure axe warriors, or perhaps spiritual axes that flew around in the air, but it obviously wouldn't be able to summon an ice golem. It was a battle where you benefited from creativity and tactics, but the Tao was still the focus. The stronger your Taos were, the stronger your avatars would be. Similarly, the greater control you had over them, the better you would be able to fight. You claimed victory by destroying the enemy's avatars or forcing them to concede. Zack hadn't understood why anyone would just give up, but it turned out that one's soul was connected to the array. Every time an avatar was destroyed, your soul took a hit. This meant that the risk of death was pretty low, but you ran the risk of seriously harming your soul if you didn't know when to give up. These types of mock battles were a popular means of both working on your control of the Tao and settling disputes in larger sects, but it was a pretty hard item to get. Why some random force in the middle of the forest had an array like this was beyond Zack's understanding, but he supposed it was simply put there by the system to create a new type of challenge. When it came to the strength of his Taos, Zack felt pretty confident. Two Tao fragments should by all means be pretty strong, even compared to the floor guardian of the sixth floor. The problem was his control, or rather lack thereof. His amateurish finesse was already all too apparent from his inability to learn cyclic strike. But that wasn't the real problem. He was still utterly incapable of infusing multiple Taos into a single skill or attack, which was the hallmark of a skilled cultivator. His sister had been able to do it since long ago, and Ilvir was getting close, as far as Zack could tell. He couldn't be sure, but he also believed Thea had mastered that technique, going by their time traveling and the hunt. That was the greatest risk to him failing the quest, as he saw it. Infusing two Taos into a skill might not double its might, but it would still increase it by a noticeable degree. The same applied to a Tao discourse, where using multiple DAOs would result in both more versatile and powerful avatars. He knew he wouldn't be able to beat some enlightened cultivators through finesse, and there was no chance of him suddenly becoming a masterful DAO controller in an instant. He would have to rely on brute force, and hope that his DAOs and mental strength, along with some creative tactics, were enough to force his enemies to give in. At least he had cosmic gaze now to help him understand what his enemies would be doing. DAOs weren't as obvious as skills, as its natural form was invisible and formless. But with his ocular skill, he might be able to figure out what DAOs the opponents were using and their plans, allowing him to gain the upper hand. There were limits to that strategy, though, as cosmic gaze wasn't some patch that solved everything that Zack currently lacked. The new skill only elevated Zack from a bumbling idiot to a somewhat capable adventurer, thanks to showing him a larger picture of the truth. But it was just a small aid in the end. The levels of the sixth floor had still taken longer and longer to complete than the fifth, even with the help of cosmic gaze. Climbing the 8 levels of the sixth floor had cost him a full 16 days. Things got more complicated at every level, and the ocular skill only helped resolve certain issues. Still, Zack judged that he'd saved almost 5 days thanks to cosmic gaze, but it was distinctly possible that the 7th floor would take over 20 days, as things looked right now. One saving grace was that the system had actually been kind enough to swap out his ocular skill in both his classes. He had thought that Inquisitive Eye would remain in his Draugr form, but he had been happy to be proven wrong the first time he'd swapped during the climb. His pitch-black eyes in his undead form were pretty amazing now, both being able to discern life force and the DAOs. Losing his old skill completely didn't bother Zack in the slightest, as it didn't serve much of a purpose any longer. Losing the ability to inspect beasts was a bit of an annoyance, but there were no doubt items that could serve a similar purpose in the multiverse. Perhaps whatever the fractal version of AR goggles was? He had tried learning True Strike in his undead form as well, but his picky pathways hadn't accepted the crystal. The improved sight alone was a great asset when fighting the series of guardians, though. The guardians of the 6th floor were all well into the E-grade already, and after the 3rd level, they were all at least as strong as the Battle Roach King, if you excluded the technocrat's modifications. Of course, they didn't all excel at defense the same way the massive roach did. One of them was a lightning-attuned thief, and Zack couldn't even catch his robes in his human form. Hundreds of fractal blades were shot out in his attempt to take down the Rat Man, but the blades only managed to destroy the ancient ruins they fought inside. Zack was eventually forced to swap classes mid-battle, relying on the defensive charges of his robes and one of Rasulil's defensive treasures to not get skewered while transitioning. The moment he unleashed the combination of Profane Seal and Vanguard of Undeath, the fight was essentially over, as his Undying Bulwark class was truly the nemesis of all dexterity-based classes. He was thankfully still able to defeat the Guardians just fine without being forced to resort to Hatchet Man's Rage, or using any of his ultimate skills, which was a relief. He still used his stronger skills now and then, but it was mostly to expedite his climb. If he had been forced to go all out against the normal Guardians, then what would he do against the true Floor Guardian? The increasing strength of the Guardians also came with a constantly increasing risk of real injuries. He hadn't been wounded so far, apart from a few minor flesh wounds, but that would probably change starting on the next floor. One mistake, and he would be out of commission for a couple of days, and those types of delays could prove extremely costly. He still had a large number of arrays and other treasures in his cosmos sack collecting dust. He hadn't encountered a situation that called for a void ball so far, not to mention the even stronger arrays that he had found in Rasulil's spatial tool. Perhaps they would prove to be the key to speed up the fights and reduce the time he had to spend healing up. At the end of the day, there wasn't much he could do about the lack of time. He could only keep his head down and complete the quest he was given. He could always just run in, axe swinging, but he truly wanted to succeed in the Tao discourse if possible. The last Floor Guardian had been related to learning a skill, and he had found a skill crystal. This quest was directly related to the Tao, and the implication was clear. If he could encounter an opportunity to improve his Taos, he had to grab it. It was pretty much the only venue for him to power up without evolving, and improving any of his Taos by one step would increase his power by a noticeable degree.
"Excuse me."
A deep voice suddenly rumbled behind him, and Zack turned around only to find himself face to face with a walking tree, its face seemingly carved right into the trunk. It rose almost 4 meters into the air, where almost half of it was a tree crown that kind of looked like a set of hair for the face that was placed on its trunk.
"Ah?"
Zack was only able to answer, his mind a bit on the fritz, since he couldn't believe he had neither sensed nor heard a living tree sneaking right up behind him.
"You are blocking the path, young man,"
the tree kindly reminded him.
"Oh, I'm sorry,"
Zack said as he stepped to the side of the road as if by instinct.
"Are you perchance participating in the Tao discourse as well?"
the Ent asked as it curiously looked at him, the movement causing its thick trunk to creak in protest. Zack hesitated for a moment before he nodded in confirmation.
"As I thought,"
the Ent nodded.
"How about we go together? I'm trying my hand as well, though I do not hold much hope for my chances. My name is Thelim, by the way."
Zack readily agreed, as he felt that this large being didn't contain any malicious intentions, and his danger sense was completely quiet as well. The tree could rather be a source of information about the scenario of the level, an opportunity to glean whether there was some Tao-related opportunity hiding somewhere. And if the Ent decided to sneak an attack, then Zack would simply turn him into firewood.
"I'm just passing through the area, and I just heard about the Enlightened Three by chance. They say there is a great opportunity waiting for anyone who could defeat them. Do you know anything more?"
Zack probed.
"So, you're a traveler,"
the Ent mumbled with a thoughtful nod.
"That's why I couldn't place you. Well, it makes sense that you came here."
Zack slowly nodded, not sure what the Ent was talking about.
"The opportunity you heard about is the chance to enter the Pool of Tranquility. It's a pond of spiritual dew that has formed a natural formation over countless millennia,"
Thelim said, the leaves on his head shaking with excitement.
"What does it do?"
Zack said, as his heart started to beat a bit faster. The name reminded Zack of something Agras had mentioned offhandedly. His family apparently possessed a magical pond themselves, which was created with the help of a huge amount of treasures and a powerful array. It was a man-made trial ground that could award a limited title. The elites of the clan could dive into it, and the further down they managed to go, the better the title the system awarded. Certainly, something a small clan like Agros's could afford wasn't anything too impressive, and it cost a large chunk of money to activate, but it was still free attributes for anyone allowed to undergo the trial. The demon had wanted Zack to buy something similar from the town shop, but there was nothing of the sort available. But what if this pond was the same? He still had 2 empty slots for limited titles, so no matter how good or bad it was, it would still be a pure upgrade. And even if it didn't give a limited title, then it was still probably related to the Tao. Was drinking the dew the equivalent of eating a Tao treasure? The effect of Tao treasures was pretty muted inside the tower, but this was a free opportunity. He might even be able to take away some of the water to drink it outside. But the next words from the Ent dashed Zack's hopes.
"Every day, a few drops are added to the pool at sunrise, each droplet infused with the spirituality of daybreak and empowered by the spirit of the forest. If my kind enters, our bloodlines will be purified. But there are some benefits for normal people as well,"
Thelim explained.
"What kinds of benefits?"
Zack probed.
It purifies and strengthens souls.
Zack once again got excited when he heard the effect of the pool. It wasn't exactly what he had hoped for, but it still sounded like something he could benefit immensely from. His soul getting corroded by the splinter was a constant worry, especially since the past few days. Because the splinter of oblivion had finally woken up from its slumber again. Chapter 9. The Enlightened Three. The splinter was once again active, but thankfully it hadn't shown any change in its behavior. It just extended its tendrils to touch the miasmic fractals for a bit before it calmed down and started to emit that mysterious energy into his mind just like before. The fact that the splinter was once again active meant that he might boil over again, and Zack didn't want another mess like the Zethiah situation on his hands. That time, only his enemies got killed. But what if he turned berserk in the middle of Port Atwood next time? He'd end up like Anzanil's disciple, forced to live far away from people. If he could strengthen and purify his soul, he would hopefully be able to increase his resistance to the mood swings brought on by the splinter. Not only that, but the power of the Tao also came from the soul, and having a greater soul no doubt came with all kinds of benefits to his connection with his Tao fragments.
"Have these enlightened three been bathing in the pool themselves?"
Zack suddenly probed, realizing a problem with the situation.
"Of course,"
the Ent laughed, causing the leaves in his crown to flutter.
"Some say that their family wanted to keep the pool of tranquility for themselves, but they had to provide this opportunity to the younger generations due to pressure from the surrounding forces. Why else would they be so kind as to share their precious dew?"
Zack snorted and agreed with the sentiment. There was no such thing as a free lunch. No one was so enlightened that they would readily hand out their resources to outsiders. It also made Zack curious just what kind of reception the reluctant hosts had prepared for them. The two kept walking for over an hour, and the Ent was happy to share his experience from living in the area. The forest they traversed was apparently beyond massive, and even an E-grade warrior would require months of travel to exit it. Thelim had never left it at all, but had rather stayed in the area controlled by his clan most of his life. Zack already knew that Earth could be considered a very small planet, even after having grown by a huge degree due to the merging of planets. It was pretty much as small as a D-grade planet could be, where the larger ones could have a surface area that was hundreds of times larger. As for C-grade worlds, the whole area of Earth would barely be considered a clan's fiefdom, a small corner of a single kingdom. Those kinds of worlds were exceedingly rare, though, and according to Galau, there were just 3 such planets in the whole Albright Empire. 70% of all C-grade forces in the Albright Empire lived on the almost incomprehensibly large Albright world, with the rest divided on the 2 slightly inferior planets. Thelim's life in the forest was pretty tranquil, with the various forest races having pretty close ties. This wasn't because there was some sort of harmonious camaraderie brought on by their connection to nature, but rather a need to band together to defend from outside threats. The forest contained all kinds of spiritual herbs, and outside forces often wanted to seize parts of the forest for themselves. That kind of conflict was pretty far from where Zack had ended up, as they were deep in the heart of the forest. Any dangerous beasts had long been culled in the area, and the only sounds were those of birds chirping and the rustling of the leaves. It was as though the peaceful atmosphere seeped into Zack's bones, and he suddenly stopped and took a deep breath.
"What's wrong?"
Thelim asked with piqued interest when he saw that Zack stood still as though he were in a trance.
"I just had a small improvement from walking in this forest,"
Zack said with a smile after a few seconds.
"You truly are a kindred spirit. The breath of nature is dense on you. You should consider staying here for a while. It is an amazing place to come closer to our origin."
The Ent nodded and resumed walking. It had mentioned that they were brethren, because it had sensed the seed of trees in Zack. Ents were one of those races that were extremely specialized, the opposite of humans, who essentially were talentless jacks of all trades. Thelem had noticed Zack's nature attunement the second he saw him, but the Ent didn't seem to notice the other Daos in Zack's body. Zack Riley smiled as he resumed walking next to the living tree. He wondered if the Ent would feel as close to him if he knew that Zack's class was called Hatchet Man, and that he possessed skills such as chop and deforestation. It was perhaps even luckier that he hadn't arrived at the floor in his Draugr form. The stench of death might have prompted Thelem to attack him, rather than initiate a conversation. Zack would easily have defeated him, but he would have missed out on the information he provided. As for the small improvement, it wasn't a lie. Zack had suddenly sensed a stronger connection with nature around him, and had stopped to properly savor the feeling. Unfortunately, it wasn't an epiphany or anything of the sort, but rather an improvement to Forrester's constitution. The passive skill had finally evolved to late proficiency, increasing the boost to vitality and endurance by a full 2% each when the effect was doubled. Zack guessed that meant that the skill would provide a 15% boost at peak mastery, which was nothing to scoff at. Zack wasn't too surprised that the skill had finally evolved, as he had traveled through all kinds of forests during the past 50-odd levels, including topographies he would never encounter on Earth. It was perfect timing as well, as just 10 minutes later they reached their destination. The wild forest gave way to a meticulously cultivated one, where each tree or bush was a work of art. They took the shapes of people, animals, and even landscapes, though they were not sapient plants like Thelem. It also didn't look like they had been pruned, but that they rather had grown into such a shape naturally.
"We're here," Thelem said as he looked around in appreciation. "The trees are slowly formed to grow into these shapes over centuries. It is a popular form of meditation here."
Zack nodded in understanding as he looked at the living sculptures all around them. It sounded crazy to him to spend hundreds of years on shaping a tree, but with lifespans running into the tens of thousands, there were probably all kinds of weird, time-consuming hobbies out there. The garden was only a few hundred meters deep, so they reached their destination quickly. A large hedge, reaching at least 50 meters into the air, surrounded the massive compound, where the Enlightened Three and their clan lived, and its gate was guarded by odd humanoids that looked like a mix of trees and humans. Their hair was green and looked like cascading grass, but they had normal skin with a pinkish hue. "Dryads?" Zack asked with interest as his mind grasped for similar beings from Earth's mythology.
"Just so," the Ent rumbled in confirmation. "As I mentioned earlier, the Enlightened Three are three grandchildren of the Perenne family's matriarch. They are dryads."
"How strong is this force?" Zack asked curiously as they approached the gate. Going by the somewhat sparse cosmic energy in the area and circuitously questioning the Ent, it became apparent that there shouldn't be any D-grade warriors in this world. But there might still be complications if the Floor Guardian was in the middle of their clan.
"I've heard that the Matriarch has passed level 90, the Ent whispered. "She is one of the strongest warriors in the sector."
Zack nodded, but not without some confusion. The Matriarch was barely strong enough to be a challenge for him, so what about the Enlightened Three? Zack had assumed that they were both the quest target and the Floor Guardians, but it felt pretty unlikely if the Matriarch was only at that level.
"What about the Enlightened Three, then?" Zack asked.
"They're all peak F-grade," the Ent said. "But do not look down on them. Rumors are that they could have evolved over 2 decades ago, but they chose to keep refining their souls as they pondered on their Daos. Their insight is extremely high. In fact, don't let the levels of any dryads fool you. They are the blessed children of nature, and they have an enviable affinity with nature-aspected Daos."
"I understand,"
Zack commented as they passed through the gates, wondering just how talented these dryads had to be that even a naturally endowed Ent was envious. Zack's appearance drew some interested glances among the forest beings, but no one barred his entry, especially since Thelem seemed to have some renown. Zack himself was thinking of a backup plan to the quest, and only threw a cursory glance at the people around him. His best guess right now was that the matriarch was the floor guardian, but the situation was a bit complicated. The expansive mansion wasn't mobbed, but there would be over 10 allied forces and a bunch of loose cultivators in attendance. Many leaders would be here to escort their young, each of them a match to the Perenne matriarch. Could he really attack the matriarch in such a situation? Everyone was here for the pond and its soul-strengthening effects, and Zack might end up mobbed if he did something hastily. Helping kill an outsider was a pretty small price to pay for gaining access to the Pool of Tranquility. Perhaps he would have to waste a couple of days until the event was over in case he lost the Tao discourse and find an opportunity to strike then. But that was if all else failed, since he didn't have the time to wait around like that. Zack and Thelem were led to a huge glade where a banquet was held. People walked around to mingle and network, but Zack was completely disinterested in the proceedings. What was the point in getting to know a bunch of people whom he would never encounter again? He only did the bare minimum as he tried to gather information about his targets. It was only an hour later that the members of the Perenne clan arrived, led by a beautiful forest dryad who appeared to be around Zack's age. She had delicate features, and her eyes were slightly larger compared to a human's, giving her a very cute appearance. But Zack already knew that she was actually an old cultivator, approaching 800 years. It was obviously the matriarch of the Perenne clan. Her grass-like hair cascaded almost all the way down to the ground, but Zack had already learned that it wasn't completely ornamental. The thick stalks were her weapon as well, and she could grow them over 100 meters in an instant, according to rumors. Behind her walked a group of cultivators of various races, each of them radiating a respectable aura. They were formerly loose cultivators who had chosen to stay behind after previous gatherings like this one, according to Thelem, and it was this very reason that the Perenne family also allowed loose cultivators to join in on the fun. Finally, there were the Enlightened Three. The three were like younger copies of their grandmother, two youths and a girl. Going by appearance, Zack would have guessed they were the same age as Emily, but they were closing in on 100 years. Reaching peak F-grade in this world was a slow and arduous process due to the sparse energy, but it also gave them ample time to work on their Taos.
"Thank you all for coming to our humble home," the matriarch said with a cherubic voice. "We are delighted to host both honored friends and new acquaintances visiting from afar. Our family has been blessed with the Pool of Tranquility, and it is our joy to share the gift of nature with the fated ones," the matriarch continued. "But the dew is limited, and only a select few can enjoy its effect every decade. The mandate of the heavens is that power is needed to seize one's fortune, and the precious opportunities cannot be wasted on the subpar."
The matriarch waved her hand the next moment, and an earthquake spread through the area. Zack frowned and got ready for a fight as the ground shook and heaved, with thick roots sprouting from the ground. Zack was about to take out his axe and get to chopping, but the Ent placed a massive hand on his shoulder.
"Wait, my friend," the Ent said from his side. "Just watch."
Zack hesitantly nodded and held off on taking any action, and he breathed out in relief a few seconds later as he witnessed the miraculous skill of a true arborist. The enormous roots weren't an attack, but the matriarch was actually growing a massive stadium out of the ground.
Chapter 10. Talent. Branches and trees entwined to form expansive bleachers that were partitioned into mid-sized platforms
that would be able to house between 5 and 20 people each. Even seats and tables sprouted up from the ground on the platforms. Finally, an inscribed desk was lifted out of the ground with the help of 6 gargantuan roots. The platform looked like an enormous coin with a diameter of 30 meters or so. It would be impossible to have a proper battle on such a small surface, so it could only mean it was exclusively meant for the Tao discourses. The disk was almost 10 meters high, and its surface looked just like the forest floor. It was a bit uneven and covered in grass, with a few bushes growing as well. 2 smaller platforms rose next to the Tao discourse array, one on each side of it. An altar holding a football-sized crystal was placed on each of them, no doubt the control crystals the competitors would use.
"The rules are simple," the matriarch said as she was lifted to one of the highest platforms by a root that looked like a massive snake. "If you wish to participate, simply take a number. To get the opportunity to bathe in the pool of tranquility, you need to defeat 2 of my grandchildren. However, if you lose the first battle, you are out." "Why this rule?"
The matriarch smiled when she noticed some discontent among the guests.
"It's to save their reserves. A Tao discourse isn't as draining as a real battle, but there are dozens of you here. My grandchildren would turn into hollowed-out husks if they had to expend so much mental energy."
Of course, there was also the not-so-hidden implication that they were favoring their own. Zack didn't feel there was anything wrong with that. It was their pond, after all, and they should be able to stack the odds in their favor a bit. Zack and Thelum walked over and got their allotted numbers from one of the servants holding a crystal, and Zack was pretty happy with the result. He was placed at the 8th spot, whereas Thelum drew 2nd. It was perfect for Zack, as it gave him some time to observe how the discourse worked. It sounded pretty fantastical from Galau's explanations, and he wanted to see some examples before he jumped into the fray himself. The best would have been to play around with the array for a bit to test out its limits and various ideas, but there was no chance of that happening. The first person to challenge the Enlightened 3 was one of the few wandering cultivators just like himself, and she didn't seem all too pleased at being the sacrificial lamb that had to sound out the 3 youths. The woman still walked up to the large control crystal, and it lit up with power the next moment. Zack looked on with interest as large swirls of mist rose out of the discourse array to quickly form the avatars the combatants would use. The wandering cultivator had chosen to form 12 soldiers, each standing roughly 1 meter tall. Their swords radiated a distinct sharpness that Zack was all too familiar with, and he knew that the girl had mastered the seed of sharpness, and it was at high stage, judging by its power. The dryad rather summoned a field of flowers, and Zack couldn't place what Tao they were made from. When Zack looked at it with cosmic gaze, he realized its true nature. The flowers barely emitted any color to his adjusted spectrum, but they were actually vibrant roots running through the platform itself, snaking their way toward the soldiers that were targeting the flowers above. The wandering cultivator didn't seem to sense anything amiss, and she ordered the soldiers to approach the flowers, even sending a few of them forward to scout out the plants. One of the soldiers swept his sword in a wide arc, and a rippling wave of sharpness cut down a noticeable section of them. There was no reaction from either the flowers or the young dryad, who held his hand against the control crystal, and the guest immediately realized something was wrong, even if she couldn't sense the roots digging ever closer. She hesitated for a fraction of a second before she gritted her teeth and ordered her whole squad forward in an attempt to preempt whatever the Perenne Scion had planned. The soldiers only had time to take a few steps before spears made of wood struck out of the ground, piercing the chest of one soldier after another, ripping them apart in seconds. Each strike also seemed to hit the controller as well, and she staggered away from the crystal as blood started running down her nose. She threw an unknown pill into her mouth and quickly scurried away after bowing toward the hosts. The battle was over in an instant, and Zack didn't even get a chance to see the Dryad use any hidden cards. He heard earlier that the three of them had represented the family a decade ago as well, and at that time all three had showcased peak Tao seeds. Some believed that the three had gained Tao fragments by now, while others thought they had rather worked on their supplementary Taos. One thing that Zack could glean from the fight was that tactics were just as important as strength. The Dryad hadn't even bothered using any fancy techniques, such as fusing multiple Taos into one stronger projection, but he had rather won using wits. The Tao that formed the spikes was related to nature, as it felt a bit similar to his seed of trees, but there were also distinct differences. Zack guessed it might be the seed of root. He guessed such a seed could contain some piercing capabilities like those he saw just then. More importantly, the seed that the youth had used was only at middle stage, yet it had defeated the wandering cultivator in an instant.
"How skilled," Felim murmured. "I only sensed the roots due to my natural affinity. I wouldn't have fared any better if I were a human in that fight."
"Good luck," Zack said to his temporary travel companion as the tree stood up with a grunt.
The one-sided battle seemed to have put a bit of a damper on Thelum's mood, but he still reluctantly stepped up to the plate. His showing was a bit better, and he summoned a massive tree that released a storm of leaves to cut his enemy. The enlightened three had changed representatives to let the Dryads rest in between fights, and the next one conjured stone golems that withstood the barrage of leaves until they reached the tree. A few of them combined forces to forcibly rip apart the tree, at which point Thelum surrendered by unsummoning his avatar.
"Well, it was worth a try, at least," Thelum rumbled with a sigh as he returned to Zack's side. "Those three siblings are truly fearsome. We both used high-stage seeds, but the amount of spirit he could instill into the avatars was night and day. He also controlled those golems so naturally, while I struggled to just send the leaves in the right direction. Both the strength of their souls and their control over their Taos are top tier."
Zack slowly nodded, but he didn't directly comment on the fight. The friendly Ent was honestly fighting way above his weight class, and if this were a real fight, the living tree would have been ripped to shreds in an instant. He only had one seed, just like the first cultivator, and it wasn't even a fragment. To challenge the three Dryads who had grown up with access to the Pool of Tranquility was to ask for a beating. But the young Ent had already said he was mostly joining the fun to gain some experience, so he took the defeat in stride. Only when the fifth warrior, a local scion of another powerful faction from the looks of it, stepped up to the plate did Zack see Tao fusions come into play. Not only did the man, who seemed to be some sort of nymph, fuse two different Taos into a mighty beast that pounced on his enemies, but both seeds were peak mastery. The Dryad wasn't to be outdone, though, and he created an image of a hunter wielding a bow covered in leaves. The hunter deftly dodged the rabid assaults of the animal until it finally managed to land a lethal strike with an arrow that shone with the green light of some nature-related Tao. It was an interesting display, but Zack felt it was a bit lackluster compared to a real fight that brought shockwaves and explosions that could be felt from hundreds of meters away. It looked a bit like level 20 warriors and beasts were fighting to the naked eye, though it looked a lot more spectacular when viewing it with cosmic gaze. Finally, it was Zack's turn to the plate, and he was eager to try out his might. He was pretty confident by this point, as none of the fights had showcased any Tao fragments, and he had two he could bring into play. He might not be able to fuse them, but summoning two fragment avatars should be able to handle any trouble that came his way. Zack jumped up on the platform, and after a nod at his competitor, He placed his hand on the control crystal and started to imbue it with his Tao. He felt a prickling sensation in his mind as he tried to conjure his avatars, like his brain had suddenly grown two sizes inside his skull. He understood what he needed to do, since connecting with the control crystal provided him with a burst of information. But there was an almost insurmountable resistance when forcing his fragment of the axe into the elusive mists hiding inside the platform. It felt like he was trying to grab the haze with his bare hands. The only solution he could come up with was to steady himself and forcibly push even more of his mental energy into the array. And it finally worked. 8 warriors emerged through the mist, each one of them radiating a palpable killing intent and a force that caused the ground around them to be cut. However, there were no exclamations of excitement or envy coming from the audience, but rather confused murmurs and subdued snickers. And even if Zack didn't want to admit it, he could understand why. Things had seemed pretty smooth and simple from the stadium, but he had barely managed to create the avatars in line with his imagination. Anything more was beyond his ability. The 8 soldiers looked mighty, but they twitched and flailed about in an extremely unsightly manner. It looked like they were string puppets controlled by the world's worst puppeteer. Zack also knew it wasn't some trick by the array, but rather due to his limitations. Just conjuring the 8 warriors was even more taxing than when he'd infused the skeletons of Undying Legion, but Zack had never gone any further than that with the skill. The skeletons didn't require constant commands, though Zack could order them about with a few simple thoughts. But these avatars didn't listen to mental commands, but were rather moved by manipulating them with his soul. This was just like any time he tried to control his mental energy and have the 2 Taos fill the fractal for a cyclic strike. The Taos turned into spaghetti in his hands, and it all turned into a big mess. The Dryad Cultivator had frozen in confusion for a second, but when she noticed that Zack's fumbling wasn't an act, she sneered and pushed the small critters looking like walking radishes she had summoned forward. They didn't look as mighty as the hunter, but Zack could see that they had been created with the help of 2 peak Tao seeds. Zack tried to think of a solution to his embarrassing situation, and he could only come up with one course of action. If he couldn't control so many warriors, then he would just have to reduce the numbers. 7 of the axemen dissipated into smoke just before vines shot out by the radish.